Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
And I'm joined now by the broadcaster and writer, Mancon McGann. Welcome, Mancon.
Hello to you, Brendan.
So you've a new travel show involving no planes. So you've been a travel writer and a travel show presenter for nearly 30 years now, I'd say, yeah?
Yeah.
When you look back on it, it involved a lot of flying, did it?
Oh yeah, I am guilty. Like, that was my whole life, was basically flying. First as far away as I could for as long as I could, and then nearby, but as often as I could. Like, my hands are filthy, dirty. They're full of blood in terms of flying in the past.
So when did the epiphany come then?
It never struck me once until 2019. 2019 seems to have been this changeover year. In one way, XR, you remember Extinction Rebellion was taking over, yeah, the streets in Britain and to an extent in Dublin and places. And then all these big new reports came out from the UN saying, like, climate change is serious. Flying in particular brings those sort of pollutants up to the higher atmosphere. It is doing huge damage. And I was just thinking, as you said, I'd been making travel documentaries since 1996, writing for mostly the Irish Times since 2005 or so. And I thought, am I going to continue doing that for another 10 or 20 years, knowing now that all of these flights that I'm encouraging people to take are going to do damage? And I realised, no, I realised I'd have to stop at least being a travel journalist that flew. I thought I could just, you know, change over and be a travel journalist that took trains and ferries, but that didn't work. And I decided that I couldn't do holidays either by flying, but I was still going to continue flying for these, like, cultural things. If I was going on a book tour or a theatre tour, for some reason that I wasn't willing to give up. But I decided from 2019 on, it was the end of my career as a travel journalist.
So it was it, yeah.
I didn't know it would be. At the time, like, I was doing a regular on the Sean O'Rourke show and the George Hook show and Virgin Media and Dave Fanning. And I thought, okay, great, I'll just, you know, slide into talking about ferries and trains. But people weren't
Nobody
ready
for wanted
it.
To know.
No, I was at home. That was the
but
end.
Come here, it's amazing that it's only 5 years. And, like, you know, you're not kind of totally ignorant about all this kind of stuff. You'd be a big environmentalist, like, down to the roof of your house is made of grass, I think. And so you were, like, in the space of awareness and everything.
Yeah, I ran in the general election in 2016 for the Green Party, so I've no excuse.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I got one or two emails from people. Now, there really was only one or two over those 10 years, the last few years before 2019, saying, do you know what you're doing? Flying has an impact. I just felt so strongly that we needed to get to know the world. That it was actually really important that the more of these bridges were broken down and the more world got to know. I thought that was enough to warrant that, you know, flights could still be taken. But it was 2019, this is too serious. We all need to make every effort we can, and one effort at least. I can't be telling people what to do, but I can't be promoting people flying in an era where it had suddenly dawned on me quite how impactful it was.
Okay, so because I'm interested in the bargains we make with ourselves around all this, right? So you were saying book tours, you decided justifiable there. So say private travel now, say with your girlfriend or friends and families, everyone's flying. Yeah. Will you just go along with that and fly?
I haven't so far, no.
Really?
In some way it was easy, because 2019 I made the big call and, like, a big shout out on the Ray Darcy show and the Irish Times, and then COVID happened, so none of us were flying.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of awkward, you know, people are going places. There hasn't been a case where there's a wedding abroad or something and the whole family, I'd feel heavy pressure, or a funeral abroad. But no, when people are going on holidays, like, my partner now goes on one holiday, like, in about 2 weeks I'm going on a holiday down to San Sebastian. I'll take the ferry from Rosslare to Bilbao. And, like, for 25 years, probably longer, 30 years, I've been taking a winter holiday every single winter, you know, to warm up during the... And I wasn't willing to give that up. So for the last 5 years, I've just taken a train, first to the south of Portugal, then the south of Spain, then the south of France. And then last January, I was going to be going to Italy, to Sardinia. But I had medical reasons, I had to call that off. But I'll do that next January, I'll be off.
So if you're going somewhere with your partner... Does she now have to suck it up and take the train and the ferry as well, or will she go, I'll fly along, I'll see you in 3 days?
You don't want to get into the intimacies of me and my partner, and she certainly doesn't want me getting into the intimacies of our life.
Okay.
But yeah, we do things separately.
Okay, so people are like, regular people listening who have, like, a limited holiday time, they're thinking, well, this guy, like, it's semi his job and everything, he can afford to take 4 days to get to San Sebastian or whatever it is. People are going to say, like, You're wasting half the holiday there, yeah. Traveling.
Yeah, like there's so much, in one way, there's so many reasons I'm not the right spokesman. First, the hypocrisy of having spent a lifetime traveling. And then also, as you said, I don't have kids. I don't have all that pressure. But like, and because I'm a writer, actually, I get my best writing done on, particularly on a ferry and on train. So the longer the journeys can be, the better. But what I do find, and I think everyone would agree, the minute we get on board that ferry, the holiday starts, you know, and there's no one who isn't excited now about getting on a ferry. And unfortunately, because we're on this landlocked island, normally it does mean a ferry. Now, that wasn't the case. We remember in the 1980s when there was no jobs in Ireland, you'd go off to Europe to work for a while and you'd always take, you wouldn't have the luxury of taking the train. You take the bus and the ferry home.
Yeah, there was the Slattery's bus to London.
Exactly. Was, well yeah. done. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was miserable, you know, particularly that ferry. Like I saw things, when I was 17, 18, 19, like I saw things and that's gone. We've forgotten. All the ferries now have stayed stabilizers on them. So like when I go down to Spain, it's through the Bay of Biscay, notorious for its churning seas in storms. And I've been there in storms. The stabilizers, you know, these huge arms, these wings shoot out either side of the boat and keep it stable. So like it's not that you're not feeling anything, but there's no longer a pool of vomit over the metal.
that was the image I had in my head exactly. And come here, I suppose slowing down and not flying makes it a different kind of trip as well, because I think often now we get into a plane, it's a liminal space kind of thing, right? And you're almost teleported and then you get out at the other end and you're somewhere else and you've no real sense that you've gone anywhere. You got on and off a plane, like, so you're more conscious now of the journey.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't there this fear we have of the homogeneity of the world? Everywhere looks so bland. It all looks the same. But when you're on a train, you're getting a full sense of the landscape as you're going. So, and you're arriving in the very heart of every city. So actually you step out from the Hauptbahnhof or the central station or whatever it is, and you're immediately getting a feel of the city. And actually cities do feel very different. They don't feel different if you're in the airport an hour outside and then getting on the airport bus or the subway. But if you are actually seeing the landscape changing as you're going through it, going through the lakes and the mountains, the industrial part, then into the very thriving city, it makes for a very different form. A very different form of travel.
So where did you go for the new show? It's called Mankind's Europe by Train, I should say. Yeah, so where did you go?
Yeah, so it was a four-part series and we started out obviously in Dublin. I loved the excitement of leaving Dublin Port and knowing you're going on this journey. Went to Wales first and had this actually, I thought, okay, we were going far. We were going to go the whole way through the Netherlands, through Germany, right to Hungary, and then I was going to loop back south down to Croatia, which I did, then through Slovenia and Italy, to France, Spain. So it was a big journey. But what I didn't, I expected the first few days would be a bit dull. I just thought, okay, going through Wales, what's there going to be? And actually, or Brussels, but there were revelations there.
I've completely reassessed Wales after watching the first episode. Like I knew it from, we went there on camp with the Cubs or Scouts when I was a kid, like, but I had a certain idea of it, kind of like the Isle of Man or something. Yeah. I don't know, but it's a fantastic spot, isn't it?
Like it's the only country in the world, if you can call it a country, that has a walking route along its entire coastline. Like they've done that. They've put a lot of effort. Let's make this a sort of a natural, a wilderness place. And they really focus on it. So what I did was just to get things off on a startway, on a sort of on a high adrenaline route. They had me flying. The crew, the production company had me flying, but they had me flying through an abandoned quarry, stone quarry or tile slate, Welsh slate, but on a zip wire at 100 miles an hour. It's probably the longest zip wire in Britain. And it was just such a great way of starting off this trip. Basically, I'm just like this little chipmunk soaring down through a vast Welsh quarry. But if you're deciding to go by train and to try and stay close to the land, it almost changes the perspective of what the experiences you're going to have.
Yeah.
Like when we realized in Belgium, there was this way that you could cycle right up into the treetops. In other words, they have a ramp going up slowly, slowly, spiraling up. Until you're at the level of the top of the trees and then you're cycling through the treetops. It's a simple enough piece of infrastructure.
Yeah.
But it was genuinely exciting.
Oh, it looked completely magical. Yeah. What other ideas did you see? Like you did look at that and think, that's something that could be done with very minimal money in Ireland. And you were quite near Brussels, I think, weren't you?
Exactly.
You get out there you're going through forests and then up into the canopy. Mm-hmm. What else did you see in terms of these simple, sustainable kind of ideas? We are working on greenways. ways and everything.
Yeah. The one thing that really blew me away when I was in Prague, and again, I just associate Prague with, like, you know, cheap stag holidays and loads of drinking. But there was a community there, and they had decided, okay, in the Soviet era, they were putting loads of fruit and nut trees all over the city. This idea of let's feed the people. But they're all abandoned now. So communities are getting together, and they've made a map of where all the free fruit and nut trees are. And they gather together every weekend with either juicers for if the berries and the fruit are ready, or ladders if the nuts are ready. And it's just a way of going back and collecting the food that's in the city. It was a simple idea, but it was a gorgeous idea. Like Ireland, we don't, in our public parks, we don't really have a huge amount of fruit and nut, but actually in our back gardens, there's loads of elderly people with these vast back gardens that just, you know, teeming with life. Or when I was in Slovenia, now, or let's say in Croatia, I visited Croatia. A lot of us, you know, with the Ryanair flights used to go to the coast of Croatia. And it was kind of, it was a cheaper version of the Mediterranean, but it was still kind of overbooked. I took the train into Zagreb, and like that was a beautiful train all the way across Germany, through Austria, got into Zagreb, and an entirely different sense of the world. And they were just so incredibly proud of their city. They said, like, even on the surrounding countryside, they said, if you want to drink water, first, don't drink bottled water. If you want to drink water, just go to a stream, go to a river. They said the same in Slovenia. You can drink from any lake, any river, any stream. I said, no, like, this is modern Europe. They're going to be polluted. Mm-hmm. They said, no, we live here. It's vital for us that that the land is clean enough. And only can we know the land is clean enough if the rivers and the streams and the lakes are clean. Like, I've heard that sort of thing from Native American people in Australia, Aboriginal Australia or Canada. I have not heard of it in Europe. But it was just, and this wasn't just eco people. This was, you know, general, like, truck drivers and people I met in cafes saying, welcome to our land. It's pure. We've kept it pure. Just enjoy it, but look after it.
You see, really, I sometimes, you go places in Europe sometimes and you think, we modernize so fast and with such enthusiasm that in lots of ways we lost the connection there within a generation practically. Yeah. A lot of them it was slower, so they kind of maybe didn't lose that. Listen, there's a CO2 calculator then that pops up for each trip you do, showing the difference between if you had flown or driven or taking the boat or train. The difference is absolutely staggering.
It's really radical, isn't it? Yeah, so overall, I covered about 5,000 kilometres. This was of 4 weeks of travel, well over a month actually of travel. And it's, you know, we divided up into these 4 1-hour programmes for RT for Sunday nights. But 5,000 kilometres. And then we had this sustainability expert who was like clocking and checking everything, the impact of everything I was doing. And actually, I recorded a whole separate podcast with her that will go out at the same time. But she was calculating that had I done all those trips flying, you know, and all these drops into different cities, it would have been about 1,400, actually over 1,400 tons of carbon. As it was, because
I was 1.4 tons, no?
No, 1,400. It should be 1,400 as opposed to 300 tons, the way I went. Yeah.
Okay, but basically,
So 1,400 and it was 300. I think that is tons, but I suppose
you're right. Okay, yeah, we'll check that. But basically, the proportionality, I mean, it seemed to be 10 to 1 for some journeys. It was 7 to 1 for a lot of them. So there is a huge appreciable difference there. So would you be hoping then that people might educate themselves a bit more, like maybe, I suppose in a way, like create a kind of a budget?
That would be the ideal way. Like some people decide to do it on love miles. Like, at the, you know, when I was at that peak, 2019, when I gave up, everyone was, just before COVID, everyone was taking weekend holidays everywhere. And we didn't even enjoy it at half the time. There was a stress, but because everyone else was going, oh, well, let's go to Prague, let's go to Budapest. So since COVID, you know, people in general, I think, aren't doing quite so many of it. And we just, let's try and think, do we really want that holiday? How do we make that holiday more meaningful? I accept that point you say about going by train and ferry does take more time. So is there an onus that governments, our employers, are some sort of tax rebate if we do? There is that time that the holiday is extended a little bit because of having to go over land. I don't know what the simplest thing, but for me,
but that we need to encourage people to do that.
To
there needs
decision.
To be incentives.
Yeah, decide. Do you want to create a carbon ration for each year, and that you're not going to go over that? And maybe if you go to America 1 year, then you'll stay in Europe for the next 2 years or something. Just that we realise that every time we take a plane, it looks very cheap, but actually those pollutants are going right up to the upper atmosphere, and they are having a severe impact.
Yeah, yeah. But look, you're not hammering that all the time in the show, and it's...
No, the show is a celebration.
It's a gorgeous show. Yeah. And in a funny way, it's about community as well, which I think is an idea that's crystallising more and more for us a lot in lots of different areas of what we talk about these days, but the community is huge in it. Listen, you've been getting treatment for prostate cancer, I know. How are you getting on now?
I'm getting on good. So yeah, during the end of filming, I think I realised, oh, there's some problem going on with my prostate, and I checked out and it was prostate cancer, which in one way, it's the most treatable cancer. So it's like I was lucky that way. And so you now either, you know, it had spread a little bit, so I wasn't able to just have the prostate removed. I had this hormone therapy and I'll get radiotherapy. But thank God, like the cures and the understanding of these type of cancers have improved so much. So it's all been pretty straightforward.
And so not a big impact on your life?
No, not at all. And it's a cliche and people say this, but such a positive impact of just slowing the hell down, of going back to my land. I have these like 10 acres of my land, of my bees and my pigs and my hens on it. And often I've just been speeding around everywhere but there, either around Ireland or around other places,
yeah.
And thinking, no, I want to settle down. I want to stabilise. I just want to look after myself. And that's been such a gorgeous thing to do.
So a lot of people texting in and saying that trains and ferries are so expensive and like that flights are much cheaper in general.
They really are. Like, yeah, I mean, you can imagine. So that trip I'm doing in 2 weeks' time, taking the ferry and then taking the train, it's way more expensive than the flight. But we know the prices of flights at the moment just are not real. We remember in the late 80s and early 90s how much a flight cost. The reason we were taking the trains and the ferries is because we couldn't afford flights. Something has happened. The government is giving, governments around the world are giving such subsidies to aviation fuel and to the airline industries. Something that needs to be balanced. And then we do need to increase the subsidy we give to train and ferry companies. I mean, without doubt, the prices are ridiculous. In one way, I'm saving because when I'm on the ferry, that's 3 nights on the ferry, I'm not paying for a hotel. Mm. So actually it balances out. But overall, and like the thing is, if I'm on the ferry, I'm in a 4-berth ferry. I'm taking it for myself because I'm going on my own. That's 4 beds. In fact, I'm 4 beds for 3 nights. It actually can work out very affordable. But when you first make that comparison, it can look...
Okay, yeah. Shocking. On the other hand, someone says here, right, we took the ferry to and from Bilbao this summer for a family holiday with some trepidation. We really enjoyed it. Comfortable beds, whale watching, picnics on deck and restaurants that were better than we expected, and lovely quiet reading lounges. We definitely do it again. It sounds like taking a mini cruise. Sounds absolutely gorgeous.
That's exactly what it is, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Mancon's Europe by train. It's starting next Sunday,
exactly,
August 18th.
Exactly, Sunday the 18th at
6:30 on RT1 and on the RT player, and then for another 3 weeks after that.
Exactly. And there'll be accompanying podcasts that look more into the whole ecological issues with Holly Tuppen, with the sustainability expert.
Okay. Mancon McGann, thank you very much.